This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. My name is Patsy Gill. I'm not Irish. I'm actually a Youper, and I have my stone from the shores of Lake Superior with me today. But I do like St. Patrick's Day. If I weren't here in beautiful Tantalk Studio in downtown Clearwater, I would be at my favorite pub in New York City, the Ginger Man. But I'm glad to be here with you because I believe that one of the joys in life is to see your words on paper, to see them published, to hold in your hands a book that you have written, or to see on film the words that you have put on paper. One person who knew about the joy on paper was Ernest Hemingway. Although he would often and loudly tell people that the most frightening thing to him was a blank sheet of paper, this from the great hunter and war correspondent, I know he was lying. Hemingway was always good at telling a tall tale. For the truth is, like me, he loved writing. I think he just didn't like competition. I'm sure that for him, when he looked at a blank piece of paper, he saw what I see, an opportunity, a world that you can open up right before your eyes. You put down one letter after another, and soon you have created magic. You can go back in time, you can jump centuries, you can go to another world, like Andy Weir did in his new book, The Martians. Every week, I hope to bring you news that will help you to start writing, if you haven't already started, or to continue on a path to the point where you can be published and see your work in the marketplace. For those of you who have already written your book, let's talk about the mysterious world of publishing and about agents and publishers and what is happening. And for those of you who are still dreaming, let's talk about how you can get started. It's time to get those fingers moving. I have in the control room today Big Ed, who's going to be my leprechaun, and he will take your calls. And just call in, and I would be happy to answer any questions to get you on your way. If you, you can write about anything. One of the most important things to remember is that any subject is available to you. One of my favorite books is called Eats, Shoots, and Leaves, a book about punctuation. For writers, it's a must-read, not just because the author, Lynn Truss, manages to make the comma into a comedy, but because it's inspiring that a little book on such a little subject can become a bestseller. It is a lesson to learn that she wrote what she knew about. So what do you know about? What do you want to tell people? It can be as simple as a book about buttons. It can be a story about your life. It can be a story about a funny relative. Don't we all have one? Well, turn it into a character in a children's book. Or did you have a life-changing experience that might help others to cope with a problem? Write a book. Or if you can't write a book, ask your dog to write one. Garth Stein did, and look what he made out of it. The Art of Racing in the Rain, a book that has sold over 1 million copies. Who knew that a dog named Enzo could have so much talent? We had a bird once. His name was Verdi. Not only did he not sing, he never even wrote an aria, let alone a bestseller. So please, think about what you can write and give me a call. One of the things that once you've started writing, once you've gotten your book into a shape, you have to start looking for a publisher. And if you think about it, there are so many possibilities out there. One of the things that many writers will ask me is they'll say, well, what happens when I get rejected? I send in a letter and I get rejected. Well, the key is that you might get 500 rejections, but you have to keep going. today we have with us on the telephone one of the most famous writer's agents in the world. Go. I am thrilled that my first guest is Irene Goodman, one of the most famous literary agents in the world. The Irene Goodman Literary Agency has been a major player in the publishing world for 30 years. Her list of clients is truly amazing, but I'll let her tell you. Hi, Irene. Thank you so much Hi. For joining me.
Thank you, Patsy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. The name of my show is Joy on Paper, because I love writing. How important is joy to you, and how is it reflected in your agency?
I think joy is very important. We all work hard, and there are always parts of things that we have to do that we may not feel like doing, but ultimately, I think that the work we do should be joyful, and we should be passionate about it. And we certainly feel that way in our agency. I always tell the people who work for me, have fun. I don't say work hard or pay attention or anything like that. Whatever they're going off to do, I say have fun. And I mean it, because it should be fun on some level, even if it's hard work, it should be fun.
Absolutely. That's my philosophy, too. Now, new writers often think that getting their manuscript accepted is the end of the process. How often do you find a book that doesn't need editing?
A book that doesn't need any editing? There is no such thing.
I knew that would be your answer.
Yeah, no, that is my answer. Editors are a very important part of the process. They do really a multitude of tasks, but one of them is to respect the author's vision and get the book into the best possible shape, not by going against the author's wishes, but by making it, but by staying true to the author's wishes and making it the best that it can be. And also, by making some shrewd marketing decisions that may or not affect the story at all, but might sell the book better. You know, if the author wrote something that's blue and the editor says, well, let's make it green, we can sell more copies that way, and it doesn't affect the story or the author's vision or anything like that, then that's a smart editor, and it would be a smart author to go along with it.
Now, I know one of your things that you're famous for is your Power Summit meetings. Is that where you discuss this type of thing?
We discuss any and all things at a Power Summit meeting. That is a high-energy day where we get all the key players in the author's professional life into one room, and we talk about the author's career. Now, quite often, authors will come to New York for a visit, and they will be taken over to their publisher and trotted around, and everybody shows them some nice artwork and pats them on the head, and they get taken out to lunch, and that's all lovely, and that's all fine and well, but that's not what we do at a Power Summit meeting. What we do is we analyze the author's career, exactly where it's at. Why is it doing well? What can we do better? What did we do last year that worked? How can we build on that? What mistakes did we make? And I mean everybody. Me, the author, the publisher, the publicist, anybody. Let's just be candid about that, and then we can cross it off our list, and we can figure out a better strategy that might work better, and we can move on. These meetings sometimes are filled with laughter because everything is going so well and everybody's having a good time. And sometimes they can be difficult, but difficult in a good way. If things are not going well, if the last book didn't sell very well, then we have to talk about that. But let's not pretend it didn't happen. Let's talk about why, without pointing fingers and without assigning blame. Well, you should have done this and you should have done that. That's really not productive. It's better for everyone to just make concrete, respectful, positive suggestions and see what can come out of it that will make things go better in the future.
For many writers, you know, the query letter is the scariest thing that they ever write. How important is this to you and in determining how if you're going to read a manuscript?
Well, you know, I don't like people to be afraid. But I have to say that I could see why writing a query letter is scary, because that's how important it is. That is your first introduction to us. That's the first thing we see of the writer. And it really does have to be perfect. And I believe that perfection is possible. I mean, you could start with the basic things. If I read a query letter and there's a spelling mistake in the first sentence, that does not bode well for the rest of the query, you know? If you didn't pay enough attention to even get that much right, then how good can the rest of it be? And I would advise authors to query every agent a little bit differently. I know that's a lot of work and it's a tedious process, but it would be well worth it. Look at every agency's website, follow their guidelines exactly, and try to give exactly what they ask for. For example, in our agency, we ask for the first 10 pages of the manuscript to be included, not as an attachment, because that's a lot of clicks that we don't want to do. So just paste it right there into the body of the email, and that way we get a little sample of the writing. That's our agency. That's what we like to see, but other agencies might feel very differently. But certainly any query letter should state exactly what kind of book this is. Is it literary fiction? Is it young adult horror? Is it middle grade fantasy? You know, whatever it is, state that right up front so we know what we're dealing with. State the word length, state whether or not it's complete, tell a little bit about it, what the story is about, give us a good hook as to something that will make us want to read it. A little bit about the author, not too much, because it really doesn't matter that much unless it's directly relevant. Like if you wrote a legal thriller and you are a district attorney, you should probably mention that. And that's it. And keep it down to a page, page and a half tops. That would be a good query letter.
Okay, I'm sure all the writers out there are like, oh boy, this is going to be a big job. I think sometimes the query letter takes more time than writing the book.
Well, I don't know about that. They shouldn't take more time than writing the book, buddy. But they should remember that it is a sales tool and that this is a business.
Exactly.
And that we look at 10, maybe 20 queries a day.
So what qualities besides the query letter, what qualities do you look for in a writer?
What qualities do I look for? Well, I look for somebody who understands that it's a business. I look for somebody who doesn't take themselves quite so seriously and has a good sense of humor. I look for somebody who sees this as an adventure and understands that it will have ups and downs. I look for somebody who has perseverance. God knows it takes that for all of us. And yet, even though you shouldn't give up on a project that you really believe in, you should always have something new to work on. I think that's another important quality. If you stay stuck on the same manuscript for 18 years and you never work on anything else and you never sell that first one, then where does that leave you? And just basic professional habits that anybody should have in business, like being prompt, being polite, just all the things people normally expect in business, and to remember that it is a business and we're all in it for the same reason and that nobody's against them. We're really all on the same team.
Many people, you know, particularly I think a lot of new writers, if they're like writing a mystery story, they start with the murder in the first chapter. What do you look for in the first chapter? What do you want? Is it character buildup, setting the tone?
I look for anything that will make me want to keep reading. And the secret to that is good pacing. Pacing simply means that whatever you said in the first sentence, you made me want to read the second sentence, and then the third sentence, and so on and so on. It could be something very subtle or very small. It doesn't have to be a grisly murder. Many thrillers do start that way, and when they do, I read that part, but then I know what's coming next. That's usually the prologue. What's coming next is chapter one. Can they sustain my interest in chapter one when there isn't something quite so obviously dramatic going on? That's the secret to good writing. If you have good pacing, you could write about watching paint dry and make it interesting. So that's what I look for.
We're going to take a short break, Irene, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, it's Mike Riso, one of the professional golf instructors at Clearwater Country Club. Our daily golf tips are here to help you improve your game as simply and quickly as possible. Tune in each morning and we'll have a fresh new golf tip that'll help you with your putting, chipping, pitching, and sand shots, and lower your scores at distance and boost your confidence too. Like to play Clearwater Country Club? We're open to the public, and afternoon rates start at only $26.95. We're conveniently located on North Betty Lane off Drew Street. For tee times, call the Pro Shop at 727-461-4188 or find us on the web at clearwatercountryclub.com.
I don't think it's a truck at all. I think we just found a transformer.
This is Optimus Primer Button, leader of the auto part junkies. And I'm calling on all auto parts junkies to listen to Nostalgic Radio and Cars every Tuesday at 7 p.m. He here on Tantalk. This is Optimus Primer Button. If you don't tune in, it will be the end of the world.
Frozen. In that instant when the puck appears in the back of the net. In that moment when jaws open in astonishment. In that second, everything stands still. But the next second, you are the energy that shatters the stillness. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the thunder.
Lightning single game tickets are on sale now. Visit TampaBayLightning.com or call 800-745-3000.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tantalk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tantalk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Show me the money.
It's the Employment Opportunity Hour with Gene Hodge every Thursday night from 7 until 8.
So the purpose of the show is to help you out there to find something that you enjoy doing instead of a job. And at the start of the show, I normally give out a formula, which I know will guarantee you to find the type of job that you want right now.
Find out the formula to an enjoyable job with Gene Hodge's Employment Opportunity Hour every Thursday night from 7 until 8 here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
Hi, this is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. With an invitation to all vacationing Canadians throughout Central Florida to join me here on Tantalk for Canada Calling, the daily update of news from home each day, Monday through Saturday at 9 a.m. and 12 noon. That's Canada Calling, a 61-year listening tradition coast to coast in Florida. Tell your friends and neighbors to join us each day, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. and 12 noon for Canada Calling. Here on the Tantalk Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We're back with Irene Goodman of the Irene Goodman Literary Agency, and she's giving us a lot of good advice on how to break into the publishing world and ideas for writers. Irene, I keep a list of my pet peeves in writing, and one of them is when people are using emails in the body of a letter of a book. What are some of your pet peeves?
Oh, that's interesting. That one doesn't bother me at all. Using an email. No, that wouldn't bother me. What does bother me are when people use too many adverbs that don't need to be there, especially in regard to what I call saids, like he said, she said. He said is fine, but preferably not having anything would be better, because it's obvious from the way it's written that we know he said it. So you don't need to tell us he said. But what I really can't stand is instead of he said, he murmured gloomily or she cackled sulkily or something like that. That's just, it's too many words that we don't need. And if you've established your characters and the tone of the scene well enough, then you don't need to tell us those things. We will hear them in our heads without being told.
Now, I know
a couple other pet peeves are an overuse of two words. Unless you're writing about Valley Girls, please don't use words like awesome and amazing.
Absolutely.
There are other words.
When it comes to writing, many famous writers have given good advice. Many people look at Hemingway and his advice to keep your sentences short. I know one of your favorite writers is Mark Twain. Beside his advice that you should always write what you know about, what other bits of advice from Mark Twain do you most admire?
You know, I'm not familiar with advice that he gave to writers so much. I believe one thing that he said that I don't agree with, he said, give it 3 years. If you don't sell after 3 years, you should probably quit. That may have been true in his day. I don't think it's true now. And I don't know what other advice he gave writers. I think the best way to study Mark Twain is to read Mark Twain. And I can make one recommendation of something that speaks louder than any piece of advice, which is to read one of his slightly lesser-known works. It's a shorter piece. I think it's a novella called Pudd'nhead Wilson. That is a brilliant story, and one of the few that he did with a prominent female character. And it's very, very clever. It's about what happens when a an ostensibly white person has African-American blood in them, which in that society technically makes them a slave. So a person who was brought up white and has lived their whole life being a privileged white person suddenly finds themselves in a much lower rung of society. What a clever concept. And the way he spins that out, the way he plays that out and shows it to you, and the horror of it at the end, the way that it hits the characters and the way that it hits the readers, is really, really clever and something that only he could have written. Which is probably the other best piece of advice that anybody can give to a writer, which is not just write about what you know, but be the writer that only you can be. It's important to study the market. It's very important. You don't want to write something and then it's brilliant and everybody loves it, but then they scratch their heads and say, but what is it? We don't know where to put it. We don't know where it fits. So you don't want that. At the same time, it has to be able to fit on a crowded shelf with a lot of competition and yet still stand out and have something special and different to offer. And that something special can only come from you. So I guess the word is authenticity.
Absolutely. That's the best advice, I think, for any writer is to be authentic and to talk about what they know about. One of the things that I know is happening with you is you have many books coming out every month. What are some of the new books that you have coming out and books that we should be looking forward to reading?
Oh, gosh. Well, I can only name a few, right? So, okay. Well, anything by Linda Lale Miller. She's just an absolute wizard of an author. She has many new books out. She has one coming out in June called The Marriage Season, which is the final book in a trilogy. She's always a winner. What else is coming out? Let's see. Sharon McCrum, wonderful author of Southern fiction. Her new book will be called Prayers the Devil Answers. Isn't that a great title?
Oh,
I love
absolutely.
That title. Yeah, that's a wonderful book. Things that aren't yet that we have sold recently, that aren't out yet that we have sold recently, let's see. Barbara Powell, one of our superstar agents, sold a trilogy of young adult novels called The Reader by a wonderful new author named Tracy Chi. The first one will be out next year. And I sold a young adult novel by the great Patrice Kendall called The Cold One. It's about a girl who is extremely brilliant and charming and manipulative and has no conscience. So what she is a psychopath. And it tells her story from her point of view in her voice, what it's like to be inside the head of a true psychopath. It's fascinating. It's chilling. And you can't put it down. And then, I know another good one. Beth Bissell, another one of our superstar agents. She does not entirely, but mostly nonfiction. She sold a very big book by Dr. Cliff Bassett called Dr. Bassett's New Allergy Solution. And it will be the first really big, important book about allergies and how people can address them and live better lives. So that's just a few.
I know I enjoyed the trilogy, the Marie Antoinette trilogy that you brought out.
Oh, yes, by Juliette Gray.
Oh.
Yes, that trilogy is one of the best pieces of historical fiction to come along in the last few years. I really love those books. Becoming Marie Antoinette is the first one. What's the second one called? Days of Splendor, Days of Sorrow, beautiful title. And then finally, The Confessions of Marie Antoinette, which is about her untimely end. And that book is amazing because everybody knows how it ends. I mean, we all know, but it reads almost like a thriller. You cannot turn the pages fast enough to see where it's going, even though you know where it's going. It takes a very skilled author to pull that off.
Now, I know I come from Michigan, and so
you
I
do. So do I.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, I grew up in Detroit.
Oh, well, I did too. Highland Park. Now, the wonderful thing about growing up in Michigan at that time, and with the snow days, we had so many snow days. We did a lot of reading, and I know there are books that I come back to year after year. Are there books that you particularly read every year, or try to reread?
There are books that I go back to refer to. One book that I read just for my own personal pleasure because I love it so much is Jane Eyre. There are also a few very obscure, out-of-print British children's books that I sometimes still read for pleasure. But there are other books that I read, not just for my own personal pleasure, but because, to me, they are such brilliant examples of great commercial writing that I study them. And sometimes I use them. If I go to a conference, I'm teaching a workshop, I will use them as examples of great commercial writing. And two of those are The Godfather, which, by the way, is also a great business book, and that makes people laugh. But it really is chock full of good business advice, not the parts where I may kill you if you don't do what I want. I don't mean that.
Okay.
But lots of other little tidbits. And another one, also from the 60s, is Rosemary's Baby. I think that is just a brilliant piece of commercial writing. As I was saying before about pacing, that is a book, if you start reading it, you just read the first few pages, which you could probably easily do online for free, you will see an example of great pacing. That, what is this about? It's about a young couple getting an apartment. Why is that interesting? Why do we care? Well, you read those pages, you'll find out. He makes you care. That's really what it's all about.
One of the things that I know that you do is that you've done a lot of work for charity, and in the past you auctioned off professional critiques. Were they written by your agents?
No. When I started doing it, I did all of them myself.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do many. I like doing it. It's something that I turned out to be good at doing, which I didn't know I would be, but... I am, and I've gotten really wonderful feedback. People, you changed my life kind of feedback, which is very gratifying. And, I've been doing this for a long time. I've learned a lot, and it really makes me feel good to give something back to the business in which I have spent my life and the business that I love. And, of course, all the money goes to charity, and that makes me even happier. But I've also had many of my colleagues in the business offer to do critiques, and... at the moment, we're not doing them. We've shut the whole thing down, and we are retooling it and reorganizing, and it's going to be back bigger and better than ever. It's going to be called writersfeedback.org. So keep an eye out for that, and anybody who wants to, it won't be an auction. We're not going to auction them anymore. It's just going to be like a store where you can buy a critique from me or one of any other number of agents or editors, mostly in New York. Who are professionals who, the real deal, who can give you very solid, professional, honest feedback for people who are ready to hear it. I think, you go through that phase when you start writing where you show it to your mom and your brother and your husband and your girlfriend, and they say, oh, wow, that's pretty good. Yeah, I like that. But deep down, you know that they care about you and they like you, and they don't really know because they're not professionals. You really want to know. It's kind of like when you have that nagging pain and everyone says, oh, I had that. That's nothing. Here, take an aspirin. But you keep having it. It keeps nagging at you. And finally, you decide to go to a doctor because the doctor will tell you the truth. The doctor is a professional. The doctor will tell you what deep down you really want to know. And that's what this service is. It's for people who are ready to hear the truth, but we try to present it in a very constructive, positive, respectful, and encouraging way. Because, everybody had to start somewhere. I don't care who your favorite author is. Whoever that author is, they probably have a manuscript stuck away in a drawer somewhere that they will be very ashamed if anybody ever read. Because they had to learn. Everybody has to learn. Writing may be an art, but more than that, it's a craft. And a craft is tricky. It has its share of challenges. But the good thing about a craft is it can be learned. And that's what I always tell people, to study your craft, get better at it.
Well, that sounds very exciting. What was the name of the website again?
It will be called writersfeedback.org. It's
okay.
Not up yet.
We're going to be looking for that. We've been listening to Irene Goodman. I don't know if anyone else has called you the doyen of literary agency world, but I think that's what you are.
And thank you.
Before I let you go, I would like to dedicate a song to you. And it's, I'm sure, one that every writer in the world would like to dedicate to you. And it's called Sincerely Yours.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Irene.
I'll pray you're mine, spring or fall, rain or shine. I can't be try. So in love with you am I. I will always cling to you. When other friends have
Okay, everyone, when you finish your query letter and you're ready to send it off, remember that song. I want to thank Irene again. She's a wonderful agent, and I hope that someday you'll be able to hear her and see her in one of the writers' conferences. A writers' conference is very important to up-and-coming writers. If you have a book and you're ready to talk to agents, think about attending one of the writers' conferences. There are many coming up, and I will list some on my website for you. Remember one thing, at a writers' conference, they will always tell you to read and read, and that's very important. So when you pick the type of book that you're going to write, of course you're going to read a lot of books in that field. If you're going to write thrillers, you'll probably read Clancy and Brad Thor. But don't just limit yourself to that type of book. Read extensively. Read books about furniture. Read books about buttons. Read books about everything, because you don't know what your character is going to need, what you need to build up your character. I think all writers have to build up their sources of research, whether it's a hardware store where you learn to all of the things that you can find in a hardware store that you can use perhaps for your character to escape from a locked room, or a blunt instrument for a mystery. It's just wonderful when you build up your entire sort of platform of research sources. I know I like to go to the local British store when I'm working on a character, an English character. I like to know what food that character would eat, what would the character drink. So this is very important when you're writing. I think we have a caller. Okay. Hello, Barbara?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, and I enjoyed listening to your literary agent. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking of sending my book to her to see if she's interested. It seems to fulfill a lot of the things that she was saying. But the thing that I wanted to, you know, when you say read, 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 when I am a writer, and when I started writing, I was always a reader growing up, always. And when I started writing, I went out and bought books on a particular subject, like viewpoint. I'd read the book, and then I'd mark all of the important things throughout it. So I read a book on just about everything that you should know about writing. And I haven't read a story since. So it kind of, I really should listen to what you were saying and what she was saying about reading books.
Oh, you have to. And you know, when you're going to write, many times people will just read the books that they're interested in.
Yes.
But spread your wings. Fly out there and read things that you think you're not interested in, and then you'll find out, wow, I can use that for a character. I can use this idea. And it opens up enormous possibilities to you. So you have to read. You have to read widely and not limit yourself to as one type of book.
Absolutely, and I've had a rather interesting life, and some of it hasn't been very good. It was scary. I was almost killed a couple of times.
Well,
and I have used
you've got some good mystery books in there.
Yeah, and I've used all of these things as fodder.
That's the way to do it.
Right.
And what keeps you motivated?
The love of writing first.
That's what we're looking for.
I can't help myself. I must write. I've been writing all my life as a child, but I never, you know, had any special education in it. And then I was involved in a murder, and people said, you got to write it. So then I joined 7 writing groups.
Well, that's exactly what everybody should take from this, that you have to keep writing and keep, you improve yourself all the time as you write.
Absolutely. You know, and I believe that there's 2 types of people. There's the person with the innate ability, born talent, they have to learn their craft. Then there are the second group of people who want to write and join groups, and they have to learn the craft, and both groups get better as long as you stick with it. When I was about to write my book...
Okay, one moment.
Sorry,
Barbara, we're going to take just a...
Go ahead.
A little break?
Yep.
Hold. Hi.
Hi.
Okay. It's great talking to you, and I'm going to pass on your advice here to everybody that they have to keep writing and
Absolutely.
Keep trying. One of the things that I know that I like to do, and I'm not sure if you do you associate a song with your writing? I know that when I'm writing, I like to, every book sort of conjures up a song and helps me to think about my song, about my book. So here's a song. Right now I'm working on a book called The Forgotten F-105 Warriors, and I'd like you to listen to this song, which inspires me every morning at 0400 hours when I wake up and work on this book.
I'm a Thud pilot. I love my plane. It is my body, I am its brain. My Thunder Chief loves me, and I love her too. But I get the creeps with only one seat and one engine too. She's faster than lightning, it says on her dials. To get a Thud airborne takes only 2 miles.
So that's a song that gets me moving in the morning and working on my book. Everyone should have something that gets them moving. One of the things that some people need is, for example, maybe it's a cup of coffee, sort of like Castle, and otherwise it could be just staring out at the sky for 10 minutes. Whatever it is that you need to get you moving is a great thing for a writer. Are you there, Barbara? Oh, okay, Barbara's gone. But I just want everybody to think about what will keep you motivated. What will get you moving? The wonderful thing about writing, really, is that you don't need anything. Everything is there, right there between your ears. You have everything in your head. All you have to do is let yourself go. Let yourself think about what you want to tell people. You know, it's not, there's, sometimes writers will say, oh, I need to get a computer, I need to a box of paper. I need to get all these things. And the fact is, you don't need anything. You could sit out on the beach with a piece of paper and a pencil. Stephen King, as many of you know, he was hit by a car a few years ago. And although for years he had written on a computer and, you know, just as prolific as ever, once he was hit by the car, he couldn't really type anymore. And he started to write by hand, and he realized, wow, this is fantastic. I'm writing by hand, and as I'm writing, my thoughts are clearer. My voice, and sort of a new voice, is coming out of me. And he really found the process of just writing by hand, just with a pencil and paper, an enormously freeing thing for him. So you don't need anything special. Many writers, Dean Koontz, for example, has always talks about how he has this very, very old computer. It's a DOS computer. I don't even know that people still have those computers. But he feels that, you know, he can just write. He doesn't have to, actually, I don't even think the screen works anymore. He can just write and let his mind go and just feel the words pouring out of him. So you don't, it's a wonderful thing about writing. You're never too young and you're never too old. If you make it a career, it's of course not always easy, but even if it's not a full-time career, you can just find this joy, this fantastic feeling of having the words down on paper. And then if you're lucky enough, or if you're clever enough on how to take the words from on paper and perhaps turn them into a screenplay and have a film made of your words, that's another excitement. But the important thing is always to set a pace for yourself. If you're a new writer, just do it. One of the great writers, Judy Blume, who wrote the series about called Fudge, she just one day sat down and said, I'm going to write. There's something in my head. She was just a housewife. She hadn't planned to write. And then she just sat down and she wrote some of the funniest books ever written. And it's beautiful to see how she developed over the years as a writer. And this is just came from simply making the decision to sit down at the kitchen table and write. So find a place that suits you. You know, if you're a busy person and you think, well, I have a book in me, but I don't know how to get it out, just set up a format for yourself. Maybe like I do for this one particular book, I'm up at 0400 hours. I do that because the pilots were up at 0400 hours and they were getting ready and taking off and into the darkness, just before dawn. And so I get this sort of thrilling sensation when I play that song, and I'm just thrilled thinking about the pilots taking off. And the next thing I know, my fingers are just flying over the keyboard, and I can write the story about these men. And this is how I have developed my work for this particular book. But you can find yours if you're a doctor, a lawyer. You know, there are many doctors who have written some fine books. And you don't have to just write a novel. You don't have to write the next great novel. You can write anything, about anything. And there's a huge market out there for nonfiction books. So if you might go that way. An enormous market for young adult books and children's books. You know, one of the hardest books that I'm having, you know, it's thrilling, but it's also very difficult, is to write a children's book. I'm writing about my grandmother and her goat. Now, Pekka was not a nice goat, and he was a really crabby goat. And the only person he liked was my grandmother. But boy, it's difficult to get that on paper. I'm thinking, well, this is a 32-page book, and I could write a 500-page book faster than I've written this little 32-page book, but it's because I want every word to be precisely exactly what I want. But again, it's a challenge. And so you can sit there and you can say, okay, I can write something. And just think of something in your own life. Think of one little scene and say to yourself, I could write that. First, maybe you have to shake off your head and get all of sort of that woolly stuff out of your head. Clear your mind.
Uno, dos, one, two, tres, cuatro.
That. Okay, there. Now, you jumped up, you stretched, and you've cleared your mind. And now you can sit down and write. And then here's a challenge. There's a little competition coming up for a one-act play. Now, what is a one-act play? It's a simple, maybe a dialogue between two, three people, a monologue even. A one-act play is something that you've lived through. How many one-act plays have you lived through? Pick out one that was interesting, something that you can put together and write it down. Make this a challenge to yourself. Sit down this week and write it. There's a competition coming up, put on by the West Coast Players, a very nice little group here in the area, and they have a submission deadline of midnight, April 11th. Doesn't that sound ominous? A great title for a mystery. Deadline at midnight. Midnight on April 11th. Now, that is a good deadline. It's far enough away that you can make it, but it's close enough that it's a challenge. Write a one-act play and submit it. You have nothing to lose. There are going to be 8 or 10 winners, and their plays are going to be put on in July. They're going to have 2 weekends of plays. So do that. Say, if you've been sitting out there saying, oh, I want to write, well, actually do it. And give me a call next week and tell me how you're progressing. I'd be happy to help you, happy to listen to you, and run ideas past you, because it's a wonderful chance to see your work in a very short time. Go to my website. It's patsygill.com, Patsy, P-A-T-Z-I, Gill, G-I-L, 1-L, .com, and I will put that information up this afternoon. And set yourself a deadline and write your one-act play. Maybe it's about the day your child was born. Whatever. Write it. It's wonderful to have been with you today. And I know that if you want to do it, you can do it. You don't have to put it off any longer. So listen every Tuesday at 11 on Tantalk Radio. And let's talk about how you're progressing. Set yourself a goal, and let's hear more about your progress. Now, it wouldn't be right on St. Paddy's Day not to mention the Irish writer, James Joyce.
Toor-a-loor-a-loor-a.
Now, James Joyce, whose book Ulysses is one of the most important books of all time, left a legacy that has influenced all modern writers, and it's influenced you, even if you don't realize it, because he broke the rules and he freed writers to write without strict rules of grammar and without strict rules of anything. Of course, we can't all get away with that, as many agents will tell you, but it still is open the possibilities. And his lyrical writing is something that I'm sure that you will appreciate if you read it. And if you don't feel like reading it, there are so many wonderful recordings of his work that you will really, really enjoy listening to him. So bend an elbow and enjoy a pint of beer today for James Joyce. But remember that it's St. Patrick's Day, but don't overindulge and don't drink and drive. Next week, I'd like to hear from all of you who have decided to write a one-act play, and also from screenwriters who are working on original screenplays or adapting a book. And let's hear more about what you're doing. This is Patsy with a Z, and I want to thank you for joining me for Joy on Paper. I hope that I have inspired you to start writing and to find your joy. Remember, joy is not an option, it's a choice. So find your joy and share it.